Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Now, at this time of year, you might be thinking of, or perhaps already have, introduced a dog into your life. But if you are thinking of introducing one for this year, there's a lot more to consider outside of the great addition it might make to your household when you decide to get a dog. And here to give us a guide on the do's and don'ts of dogs is vet Pete Wedderburn. You're very, very welcome.
Thank you very much, Deborah.
I'm kind of disappointed. I was half hoping you were going to come in with a little puppy or something, you know, just to give us a strong sense of it. But look, before we go into the nuts and bolts of it, and please, if you want to, 51551, text in any questions that you have for Pete. But there's a lot of things to consider.
There are.
Before you get a dog.
I suppose the first thing that I'd start with is it's absolutely worth considering the huge benefits from having a pet. Studies have shown that children that grow up with pets around them grow up to be more self-confident, more self-assured, more socially adept compared to children who don't grow up with pets. And I think that's because animals are really good at teaching us about body language, which is so important to us humans socially, but we maybe aren't so aware of it. But it's all that animals have to communicate. So if children grow up with animals around them, they grow up being very, very sort of spatially aware.
And also the cycles of life, you know, if a dog dies or if a beloved family pet, you know, goes, they're being taught all of that.
Mm.
What are the top three questions you should ask yourself before you get one?
Well, I think the first thing I would do, and it's kind of sad this, but it's very true, is ask yourself the money question. Because if you get a pet, then you are legally responsible for its care. And that means feeding it, housing it, looking after its health needs.
So it's not just the purchase price.
Far from it. And of all those costs, the food is probably the most expensive one. If you have a big dog, it might cost you, I don't know, even €3 a day to feed them. Mm. That's £1,000 a year, you know? So, like, you have to be sure that you've got enough money spare in your budget to cover the costs of an animal.
And obviously the all-important part of getting pet insurance as well, just making sure that...
Pet insurance is important because undoubtedly you'll become deeply emotionally attached to your pet. Yeah. That's part of the joy of it. And you don't want to have to make life and death decisions based on what you can afford. Yeah. If you can manage to cover the insurance, it means that if it comes to it, you can just say to the vet, do everything you need to do to save my friend. And that's a huge relief.
And the other big questions people ask themselves is, do I have the space, not just the physical space, but do I have the space in terms of the commitment? Because they are very, very sociable beings that need love and attention. And
you're responsible for them 24/7. You can't just go off for 2 weeks in the Mediterranean without thinking, what's going to happen to my pet? And it can cost you €30 or more every day to have your dog looked after in boarding kennels. So, like, that's another bit on your budget. And not to mention the day-to-day routine. You can't just have a dog and then go off to work at 8 in the morning and come back at 7 at night anymore. No, you can't do that. You've got to look after your pet. You've got to have in your mind how they're going to experience life when you're not with them.
When you're not around. What about the physical space? You know, and obviously it might depend on the breed, but do you need a lot of physical space for a dog?
Well, funny enough, I don't think you really do. Even quite a big dog like a greyhound, it spends most of its life sleeping, you know. You don't need massive amounts of space. You need to have somewhere you can exercise your pet and somewhere they can ideally run off the leash so that they can, you know, burn up energy, both physical and mental. So that's important. So, but other than that, I don't think that, I mean, there are obviously exceptions, but in general, the amount of space you have, I don't think is a huge restrictor.
Yeah, because it can be very restrictive, say, in apartment blocks, there might be rules that you can't have them.
Or, you do have to look at that.
Whether you can do that. Just on the pet food thing, because, like, I mean, there is, you know, luxury pet food, everything out there. Look, I mean, is that something, you know, that you need to kind of blow up the budget for, or are there sort of manageable options for pet food?
Well, my view is that the biggest driver of the development of all of these new fancy dog foods,
fit for human consumption, etc.
Well, the biggest driver, I think, is appealing to humans, not appealing to dogs.
Okay.
Or cats. If you look at the label of pet food, you'll see that it is, it says in it nearly always, complete pet food. And that means that the cheapest pet food from a discount supermarket will be nutritionally as complete for your pet as the most expensive boutique home-delivered, whatever you choose to spend your money on. So there's no doubt that they both provide nutrition that's adequate. Having said that, there are benefits from the premium type food. They tend to be like everything in life. If you pay more, one of the reasons you pay more is because the components of what you're buying are more expensive. So they tend to choose better cuts of meat. They tend to be more consistent batch to batch. The cheapest foods, what they'll do is if you look at the label, they're not specific. They just talk about animal derivatives
so
rather than specifically.
So,
well, but more than that, they can change it from batch to batch. That broad label gives them the freedom to change from batch to batch. So it means that your pet, although you're buying the same brand, there could be very different ingredients over time. And so a lot of pets have sensitive digestive systems.
Yeah.
So if you buy a premium type food, you can be more assured it's going to be the same ingredients batch after batch after batch. That's what you're paying for. And what that means is that your pet's less likely to get an upset stomach.
What about, and often hear sad stories, particularly after maybe Christmas or when there has been maybe people buying dogs, is, you know, dogs turning up in rescue homes. People are sometimes a bit afraid about picking up a rescue dog because they might think it might have a traumatic background. Is it, you know, what its behaviour is going to be like? Would you recommend that you should go and look?
I'd always start with a rescue dog before any other type of source, because people would be surprised. There's loads of animals in rescue centres, and I'm involved. I'm the chair of the ISPCA, and I know from our centres we've many, many dogs that would make the perfect pets for many people, and people just don't come looking. Obviously, there are also rescue dogs that are more challenging, but the great thing I think about working with rescue centres, and there's a whole bunch of different ones, not just the ISPCA, there's the DSPCA, there's the Dogs Trust, there's Madra in the west of Ireland, there's loads of smaller ones as well. The great thing about working with these people is that they are experts at rehoming dogs. That's what they do.
Matchmaking.
They're passionate about it. Yeah. So they're not going to let you take a dog that they don't think suits you perfectly. And so it means that you're much more likely to get well matched. Whereas if you go to a dog breeder to get a puppy, they want the sale. They have. I know there's loads of good dog breeders who are equally passionate about making sure that you're a good match, but there's not necessarily so. You can end up with somebody who's getting up, passing you on a dog because they want to move it on rather than because they really, really care about
them. Is there something, is there anything you do need to be prepared for, though, particularly if you have young children, about taking on rescue dogs that perhaps do have a bit of a history, or, you know, is there anything advice you'd give them?
I think you need to talk in detail with the rescue centre about your situation and about the background of the dog. Rescue centres generally know a lot about the animals that they're rehoming. They know a lot about their past history and about their temperament, because they've had them for a good while usually, so they understand the animals. And so that way you can be sure that you're not going to get a dog that's likely to cause you trouble. The other thing is that rescue centres are also generally very good about, you know, taking a dog back if there is an issue. They don't just pass the dog on to you and say, it's yours now, off you go.
Yeah.
They'll follow it up. And they'll also give you support with things like animal behaviour. Like, that's a really big issue these days, is people have behavioural challenges from their pets, and many rescue groups have support built into their system to make sure that you get advice to keep you right there.
And what about managing children's expectations? No, you can kind of hear them saying, no, I'll walk the dog every single day, but even just introducing a pet into the home.
Well, I think it's great that many children do make those offers. I think you have to be realistic about it, and that many of them won't actually follow it through.
Yeah.
But if you can encourage them to do it, I think it's a great way of children learning about the responsibility of caring for another creature. The other thing I'll say again is, I talked a bit earlier about the benefits of pets to children. Pets and teenagers are a fabulous thing, because when you're a teenager, life, the world can seem a bit against you sometimes, but your dog or your cat will never be against you.
Yeah.
They give you genuine, you know, love that is completely, it doesn't, nothing else depends. They don't expect you to tidy your bedroom or to be nice to your siblings, or they don't expect anything of you at all. They will just love you.
Unconditional love.
Completely.
You'll get nowhere else. What about house training, and especially if you've got a puppy?
Well, I'm a great fan of so-called puppy crates. Now, you know, these are, they look kind of a bit Spartan, like metal crates, and putting your dog in a metal crate. People don't like that idea. I see it more so as a pet's private bedroom. And dogs know naturally not to mess in their den. Mm. They do that instinctively. If you just put your dog into the middle of a kitchen and there's loads of space all around the dog will wander over the far end of the kitchen and go to the loo because that, yeah. as far as they're concerned, is out of their den. However, if they're in a crate, that's a crate with nice blankets and some toys in it and a really comfy place, they won't go in that.
Yeah, and also children know that when the kids go into, or when the dog goes into the crate, that's their kind of space and time as well. So it's boundaries for both.
It's really important for dogs to know they can go somewhere and get some peace.
For little puppies and little people. What about the legalities? Because you mentioned earlier that you are legally as well as morally responsible 24/7. For anyone who is perhaps thinking of getting a dog for the first time, what are the legalities that are involved?
I suppose there's three things I'd say that's important. First of all, every dog that changes hands in Ireland must be microchipped. Yeah. So if your pet dog has a litter of puppies, you can't just give one to a friend without it being microchipped first. Or if we buy a puppy, it must be microchipped. Or if we take on an adult dog, it must be microchipped. So every dog has to be microchipped and registered in your name. That's the first thing. Second thing is every dog over the age of 6 months must have a dog licence. Dog licence costs you €20 a year. So you have to have those
it
two things.
It doesn't cost a lot, but it matters a lot.
And the third thing is that you should be aware that legally you're responsible for everything that your dog does. So that if your dog causes an accident, whether it bites somebody, jumps up and somebody knocks them over, or runs in the road, causes an accident, you are responsible. And that can be very expensive. So pet insurance, which generally is taken out for vet's fees, nearly always covers third-party liability as well. And you can also sometimes get third-party liability insurance for your dog on your home insurance. It's worth checking. You should certainly not ignore that third-party risk.
It's absolutely fascinating. There's so many things to consider, but I'll forgive you for not taking a puppy into me this morning, Pete Wedderburn. Thank you very, very, very much.